Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Dr. Robert Snyder. I'm the medical director for the Bureau, and we are going to start this meeting of the Medical Advisory Committee. We are going to start with just asking the committee that will, if Misty Williams will chair the meeting today. Dr. Tudor is out. Would you please mute your microphone, please? So that way we won't have feedback. Okay.
Thank you.
So, Misty, if you'll call the meeting to order, and we will proceed with the agenda.
Okay. I will go by what is printed on my paper and call the meeting to order. We do have introductions. Do we want to start in the room with Dr. Brophy?
John Brophy from Memphis.
And Misty, and then I'm Dr. Robert Snyder. So we'll go through the list. The individual on the 404 area code, would you identify yourself and your organization?
Yeah, this is Alex O'Neill with Arbicare.
Okay, hi there. Welcome.
Hey, Dr. Snyder, it's Adam Jane.
Okay, hi there. Welcome. Brittany Lynn, would you identify your organization?
Hello. I'm with Schmidt Government Solutions.
Okay, very good. And I recognize, wait a minute, Tina Ewing.
The Hartford, Tina Ewing.
Okay, great. Thank you. So I recognize the rest of the names. So we're going to call the roll. Mark, could you call the roll?
Be glad to. Ms. Misty Williams.
Here.
Dr. John Brophy.
Yo.
Dr. Richard Cole.
Here.
Dr. Jeff Hazelwood. Dan Hedrick. Ms. Jenny Howard. Dr. Tim Jones. Dr. Greg Kaiser.
I'm here.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Amy Moses. Dr. Wills Oglesby. Ms. Story. Dr. Robert Snyder.
Here.
Dr. Jim Talmadge.
Here.
Dr. Snyder, I think we're short one member for a quorum.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed that somebody comes in. So, if you'll watch for that, or Susie, if you'll watch for it. Okay.
We can call for approval of the minutes, but not until we have a quorum, correct?
Correct.
All right.
And the next one also, conflict of interest form. Susie has identified those individuals and emailed them, so we won't embarrass you in person.
All right, old business, ODG's update, especially on Fraser today. That was an interesting turn of affairs.
Correct. So we'll hold up on the ODG updates for December, and hopefully we'll get a quorum. But we had emailed after the last meeting with a question from Dr. Kaiser and Dr. Hazelwood about the status of trazodone. We compiled an email that we sent to ODG, and ODG's response is that as of their next update, they will send us the will in fact include trazodone as a Y drug for insomnia and for sleep. So thank you to Dr. Kaiser and Dr. Hazelwood for providing the background information that we use to send to ODG. And I will read you their response. I think it was in the information that we sent, but the team agrees that trazodone is safe and effective and has been used off-label for insomnia across many different patient populations. This drug is also cost-effective. For these reasons, ODG will update the status of trazodone as part of their, and they said their January formulary update, but it was delayed until mid-March. So we got a note from ODG that as of, they will release the update, I believe it's March 16th, and it will become effective then, I think, the following week. In that vein, I'd like to welcome Troy Prevost, who is taking Patrick Robinson's place as our ODG representative. So, Troy, do you have an update for us?
Yes, sir. And first of all, nobody can ever take Patrick Robinson's place, as you know. He's a legend, and he's doing good work in Louisiana now that he's he really liked this group, and I'm glad he was able to mix this. The update on the formulary would be March 29th, not the 16th, Dr. Snyder. And that you'll be getting an update. You should be getting an update letter in the next few days on all the changes coming March 29th. There's a few content changes too. It's not going to be anything substantive, but that's when the formulary update's going to occur as well, March 29th. So
thank you and welcome. I hope that you'll
thank you.
Continue to work with us. We have enjoyed Patrick and look forward to continued more good work from ODG.
Thank you.
One of the questions that came up was for individuals that do not have access to the entire ODG, there is a tutorial on the ODG website that allows an individual to get a sample of ODG. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. We have self-paced webinars now for both, for all of the products that ODG has, work comp especially.
Thank you.
And an added thing too, Dr. Snyder, if a group would like some training, we'd be happy to provide a clinical educator to help out. If there's a couple, two or three people that would like some individual training, we can handle that.
Thank you for that offer.
Medical fee schedule rates.
We are very pleased to have with us today Pauline Williams, who works with Fair Health. I don't know, Pauline, anybody else of your crew, Lydia or Christine?
No, sir. It's just me today.
Okay. So, do you see my screen? Or did I not do it correctly? Let's see.
We see your screen now.
Now you see it. Okay, great. So, the fee schedule. This has been a couple years in offering. The rate tables that you see that we're going to explain were developed by Fair Health. They're going to be free of charge to all the parties to eliminate the need for either providers or payers to have to calculate their own. The only additional steps for determining the correct maximum allowable payment will be the additional necessary for certain physician specialties by the correct modifier or for mid-level providers and psychologists. So all physician services will be listed. It is hoped that these rate tables will reduce the inquiries to the Bureau and also disputes to the Medical Payment Committee. These tables encompass outpatient services, incorporating chapters 800-02-17 and 800-02-18. The inpatient services fee schedule 800-2-19 will remain unchanged. With these fee schedules, we have increased the rates offering to some to attract subspecialty physicians, including pulmonology, psychiatry, cardiology, neurology, and to attract clinical psychologists. Confusion over the use of certain payment codes has been eliminated by removing most of the special CPT codes and replacing them with state-specific fee payment codes, and these are called Z codes. Certain laboratory procedure payments have been reduced to be in line with national and regional averages. Initial estimates from NCCI assess negligible impact on compensation costs for employers and hopefully will attract hard-to-find specialists with these rate tables. Just to make things more difficult, the U.S. Congress just passed a partial reversal of the reduction proposed for Medicare for 2024 from 3.37% down to 1.69%. Once that is officially posted on the Medicare website, FairHealth will update the fee schedule that you're seeing today before it will be distributed. This may delay the release of the rate tables, but we hope not long enough that it will create any confusion. This does not change any contract unless that contract specifies a percentage of the maximum that's based on Medicare. In that case, the contract prices would have to be recalculated. So now let's look at the layout. And this is our first try at this, so I hope that you will give me any suggestions, give us any suggestions. So at the bottom of the Excel spreadsheet, you will see legend and information, and that's what you see. And then each table then, will list different codes under evaluation and management, anesthesia, surgery, radiology, home health, and then finally, the last one will be the Z codes, and we will look at those at the end, these state-specific V codes. So this is what will be available from FairHealth, and we will go back to the legend, and we're going to work through the legend pretty much one line at a time to make sure that that you understand how it's going to work. And this is a little bit like any other program that you're going to be exposed to. It just takes a little while to get organized with it. This first one, though, is the icons, and you will see these in tables A, B, and C for the tables. And I'm going to go on to E&M management, okay? And here are the columns A, B, and C. So you will see that then in most of the legends, not all of them. You will see it in surgery. You will not see it in anesthesiology because those codes are not not calculated the same way. So these are the icons that you will see. A new code for, that was not present last year, a revised code description, add-on procedures, telemedicine eligible ones, and then modifier exempt procedures. And so these are the icons that you will see in tables 1, 2, and 3. Okay? Now, the next one, APC classification, and I'll go to this one would not have, let me go to surgery. So this, under table K, you will see the APC classification, and then you will see the status indicators. And then you will see outpatient maximum allowable reimbursement for these particular APCs. Now, we're going to go back to the legend. So that's the APC. Assistance for surgery, you will notice that in some of the categories for surgery. And so we will go here, and you will see assistant surgery under this category. And then go back to the legend, and this will identify exactly which one is appropriate.
Okay? What column is that?
That's column K under surgery. I'm sorry. That's column J under surgery. Okay. So, like any other program, you can see how you're going to have to toggle back and forth until you get used to each one of the tables to see what it exactly and so the next one is base units. This applies to anesthesia, so you will see the column C for base units under anesthesia. The next one, the codes. You will see CPT codes for dental procedures, the dental codes. I'll go over and just show you those. Here are the dental codes under column B and the maximum allowable reimbursement. Okay. Then the HIPAA codes then will come into play in other ones, in home health and in ambulance and some of the other non-physicians or non-professional services. Then each one has a description. Okay, so here's your description. So these are allowed because Fair Health pays AMA to allow the description and the codes to be used. So this would be similar to your, or exactly like your book that you would purchase from CPT. Then facility maximum reimbursement, maximum allowable reimbursement. So this is facility services. So that would fall under radiology, for one example, facility maximum allowable reimbursement, and non-facility maximum allowable reimbursement. You can see this under the radiology.
Is that column O?
Well, each column, unfortunately, each column changes a little
every
bit.
Every time you hit a different tab, got it.
Not always, okay? For surgery and for radiology, they're pretty much the same. Okay. So it's only on some of the specialty things, like if you go on to general medicine, general medicines are exactly the same as the E&M. Okay. So we're going to go back to the legend then, follow-up days. This will occur with surgery. So you will see this for follow-up days, and you can see the identification codes. So that's why the legend is really important, that you go back and look at those follow-up days for and understand the legend. Obviously, this, as you use the program, it will become a little bit easier. So the MAR is the maximum allowable reimbursement amount, and so that occurs with surgery. It occurs with E&M codes, so you will see that under maximum reimbursements. So non-facility maximum, facility maximum, and then outpatient maximums under E&M for physician services. To give you an example, let me show you for 99214, which is a mid-level outpatient follow-up appointment, the non-facility reimbursement, which would be the facility that you would receive in your office, would be $188.61 in a facility such as a urgent care center. The maximum will be $143.54, and you can see that follow-up days is not applicable to this one. Assistant surgery is not applicable to this one. There's not an outpatient facility maximum reimbursement, and there's no status indicator. So outpatient maximum reimbursement, we just talked about that. This would be occur with surgery for either hospital outpatients or ambulatory surgery centers. So that would be under column L, and that would also have the status indicators for your outpatient maximum reimbursement for services in an outpatient hospital setting or in a ambulatory surgery center. And then here is an example under the radiology, where the maximum reimbursement is listed as outpatient maximum allowable reimbursement and the difference between the non-facility and the facility reimbursement under the CPT code as opposed to the facility, which would be under the APC code with a status indicator. Okay? We talked about status indicators. This has provided information for outpatient facility payments. Now, urban and rural maximum allowable reimbursements come into play with ambulance services. And so under the ambulance tab, you will see, this is the only place that you will see these urban and rural maximum allowable reimbursements. But these then have different columns, and you can see that most of these are by report, okay, with the exception of then the more common ones that you will see, defibrillator supplies and other ambulance waiting times, those different things that are listed under ambulance. So back to the legend. Now, for RVU conversions for those individuals who are not paid on a dollar basis, the RVU conversions can be divided by the dollar amount by the conversion factor. When Medicare publishes their new conversion factor, then this will be updated. Okay, for board-certified and board-eligible physicians, they may be entitled to additional reimbursement depending upon their subspecialty or their participation in the certified physician program. And these rules and the appropriate modifiers then are listed in the rules. Certified physician program registry, there is a link here, so you can find those physicians that are applicable for the Z codes that we will finish this presentation with. And then finally, the non-physician practitioners, that is psychologists, PAs, and APNs who are properly licensed and certified to perform services other than assisted surgery, shall be reimbursed at 85% of the fees listed on the rate tables using modifier NP. Now, to answer some questions that are going to come up, this non-facility, when we're talking about E&M codes, this non-facility maximum allowable reimbursement that you see listed here is 160% of Medicare. Okay? Base units, in workers' compensation base units, they're paid $75 per base unit. There are some special regulations about times when base units can be charged, whether it be less than 15 minutes, 8 to 29 minutes. So there's special regulations concerning those that the anesthesiologists are familiar with that may come into play with some special anesthesia services. These surgery codes are 200% of Medicare. So for an orthopedic surgeon or neurosurgeon, then the multiplication would be 1.375 times this rate for an orthopedic surgeon or a neurosurgeon. So when the bill comes through, the billers in the provider's office would just have to take the non-facility maximum allowable reimbursement and multiply on those surgery codes by 1.375.
Is the burden for adding the codes appropriately on the physician when they submit them to the billers?
It is.
And the carriers? Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Radiology is already at 200%. Okay. Laboratory is already at the appropriate level. Pathology is already at 200%. General medicine is at 160%. So for subspecialists, If we go down and look at a code for, let me see if I can get to the bottom of this. So as a perfect example for a psychiatric, a 90791, okay, for the specialist psychiatrist, they would multiply this by 1.125 to get to the 180%. Okay. Physical medicine, these are the physical therapy and occupational medicine codes. These are at 130%. These are already set. The dental codes were filled in at, I believe it was 60% of the national average. Then we have the home health codes, we have the ambulance codes, and then these are the DME codes, the HIPICS codes for DME. And then we will finish up with the state-specific Z codes for the state of Tennessee. We're placing some confusing ones concerning missed appointments for new patients and established patients. We've established Z codes. Missed appointment for a new patient, a Z code would be placed on the bill for $200. A missed established appointment, $100. Causation opinions, where new information is provided, there are Z codes specific to those. Replacing the impairment rating code is a Z code of Z0310. Instead of putting the CPT code, that would be the permanent impairment evaluation code. Case manager meetings, behavioral intervention for substance abuse, independent medical examinations. There are two codes for the first hour and then each additional half hour for independent IMEs. IMEs, again, would not use the CPT codes. They would use the Z codes. Okay? So I'm sure that that was a question. Then there are three final Z codes for the certified physician program. So for a new patient, the certified physician would get an additional $80, which would be a Z code, on top of the E&M, the common E&M codes that they would normally charge for that visit. Established appointments would be an extra $40. And then finally, the certified physician program impairment ratings and form completion, an extra $100. So on top of the code, on top of the impairment rating code of Z0310, a certified physician would then add Z0817. So that's a lot of information, and I know it's new to most of you. If any of you have worked in South Carolina and Georgia doing any billing and collections or billing for physician services in any of those states, these are very similar to those rate tables. So I'm open to any questions at this point concerning that. Concerning these rate tables, when you go through these legends, if there are things that are unclear to you or if there are things that we need to clarify, we try to make the legend short enough so that it would be relatively easy to digest. There's other information that I gave you, particularly about the current what the non-facility amounts are that we are going to include when we update the medical fee schedule handbook. So we'll have a further explanation of this in the medical fee schedule handbook for each one of these tables.
So does the new Fair Health and Z codes take effect?
What date? April 1st.
Okay. And then
they will be effective. All of these rates will be effective then until March the 31st of 2025.
And Misty, can I also add that the Z codes are actually in effect now?
Okay.
The rate tables, I'm sorry, the rate tables will become effective.
Right, that's what I was looking for. And then that's going to go through March 31st of 2025. And at that time is when Medicare is going to review their rates, or will they be reviewing those in between?
Well, Medicare, usually in October or November, Medicare comes out with a proposed 2025 rate, okay, conversion factor. So far, every year, Congress, sometime in the spring, has revised that proposed Medicare rate. They were late this year. Most of the time, they do it in February, but they didn't do it until March, I believe it was Friday. It was just March the 8th that they did that this year. And so that put poor Fail Health under the gun here to see how quickly, and so Fair Health is waiting until Medicare publishes that on their website so that we know what the official exact numbers are, and then they will update these rate tables. Hopefully we'll be able to get them out in a reasonable time. I think the most important thing though is that individuals that are going to have to use these rate tables become familiar with the rate tables, because the numbers are not as important as the concept, okay? So you'll be able to plug in these numbers, whether it be $80.09 or whether it be $81.02. You'll be able to plug these numbers in, okay? Much easier if you understand the legend, understand each one of the tables going forward. So so that's why I'm presenting it to this committee and those that are present. We're going to present it to the Medical Payment Committee and their group on March the 19th. Then, I don't know if you've seen that, then on March the 21st, we are going to have a Q&A open house going over this material at 9 o'clock on a Teams meeting, open house on March the 21st at 9 o'clock, and then again on March the 25th on Monday afternoon at 2 o'clock. So we'll give everybody that's interested a couple more chances to get at this rate tables before they go into effect.
And the website for Fair Health is just simply fairhealth.com.
Well, the link is already on our website.
Okay.
To get to the Tennessee rate table, Fair Health, Colleen, you may update this, but Fair Health has notified those individuals that have applied for the rate tables that there will be a delay. But they will be the link is active for a pre-order for the rate tables.
Okay. Right. If you want to go on and order it now, you'll get a confirmation of that pre-order, and then when the tables become available, you'll receive an additional email with a link to download. Just an update, Dr. Snyder, is what we're hearing is that Medicare is expecting to release the updated fee schedules this week. So we're hopeful if they release them this week that we will be able to turn around our rate tables fairly quickly and have that hopefully out, you know, to your stakeholders in the next couple of weeks.
Thank you. We appreciate that. Questions? Comments? Seems complicated, doesn't it? So, but like any other program, once you get used to it, I'm hopeful that it's going to be more efficient for providers across the board. as well as for payers, so the calculations will be done for you. And the only thing would be the application of the modifiers for subspecialty physicians or for the psychiatrists and mid-levels. I'm sorry, psychologists and mid-levels.
All right. Are we done?
I guess. Awfully quiet group today.
That's because everybody's brains are spinning. So, medical fee schedules and billing is a different animal for sure. CertNext is certified physician program update.
As of yesterday, we had 23 physicians on the certified physician program. And those names and their NPI numbers are available on our website. And so when you see when the billers see the Z codes, they can go to our website to confirm that those physicians are there for those particular services for certified physicians. And those are already in effect.
All right, next is the Reward Employer Honor Roll.
Susie?
Yes, thank you. So we do have an update on that. We did complete all of our evaluations of the applicants, and we have awarded the honor roll to 7 employers, and some of those employers had multiple locations. So we are in the process of reaching out and notifying them. We will be probably releasing a press release at some point to let everyone know those employers. And we will also announce them at our conference. What I would like from the MAC committee and our guests would be any information you have on some different types of conferences that maybe small employers have in the state of Tennessee. Brian Holmes and I would like to reach out on behalf of the Next Step program and the Reward program and try to have some hold a booth at some of the conferences or maybe be able to get on some of those panels to let more employers know about the benefits of the Reward program and the Next Step program. So if you are aware of any upcoming annual conferences or any employer meetings, please let me know. I appreciate it.
All right, rules and legislation update.
Hey, everybody, this is Troy. Amanda Terry is still down at the legislature today. The legislature is still going full blast. So I'll do the best I can for a quick update. It's been fairly quiet for workers' comp, maybe not quiet in general at the legislature, but at least for workers' comp this year, it's been fairly quiet. The main things were sunsets for the Bureau, the MAC committee, and the MPC committee. All three of those entities received a 5-year extension. So this committee and the medical payment committee and the Bureau itself were all extended for 5 years through June 30th of 2029. And those sunset bills have been signed by the governor. I don't have the public chapters yet, but he signed all three of those on February the 21st. So those move quickly, which is good news for us. Also, our administration bill has moved through the process and has been signed by the governor as of last Thursday. The administration bill was fairly simple. The main piece there was an extension of the coverage fraud legislation for our uninsured employer misclassification compliance unit. In 2021, there was some legislation that some of you probably participated in a working group on that back during the pandemic on increased enforcement mechanisms for the Bureau, such as subpoena power, distress warrants and such, to try to enforce our uninsured employer misclassification statutes and the penalties that we assess. So that has gone well. We asked for a 5-year extension and received that. So that also will extend until June 30th, 2029. The only there was some housekeeping matters in our administration bill that do away with a paper form, the notice of complete notice of controversy form. Is a electronic filing, and so we did away with the language in the code about the paper filing, and the time frame on employers filing their first report of injury with the Bureau is a flat 14 days now going forward. Previously, there was that bifurcated filing requirement that if the injured worker missed more than 7 days of work, it had to be filed within 14 days. If they missed less than 7 days, you had till the 15th of the following month to file the first report with the Bureau. It's now just a flat 14 days to make that easier and more consistent. And there's a scope of practice bill that's sort of moving slowly through the legislature to expand PAs and APNs scope of practice. That does not open Title 50 and doesn't specifically deal with workers' comp, though. There's nothing in there about being on panels or addressing causation or impairment ratings or anything like that. Interestingly, there's a bill that would permit attorneys to carry concealed handguns in judicial proceedings. I don't know about that, but you know, in most judicial proceedings, the judge is generally allowed to carry a concealed weapon, and you know, law enforcement, public officials. This would let attorneys who have a permit to carry a concealed weapon would be able to take it into a judicial proceeding where, as we know, sometimes emotions run high in these in-person judicial proceedings, but we'll see how that goes. There are a couple of commerce and insurance bills that deal with a guarantee association being set up for self-insured employers as sort of a reaction to the yellow freight bankruptcy situation. And if anybody's got any questions about any legislation, please let me or Amanda know. We'll be happy to try to help, but it has been relatively quiet. Rulemaking, Dr. Snyder and Amanda and Jay Blaisdell went down to the government operations rule review last month, and the medical impairment rating registry rules were amended, and that was approved by the Joint Government Operations Committee, and I believe that those changes went into effect March the 4th. And that would allow chiropractors to be included in the medical impairment rating registry, and there was an increase in the missed appointment billing there. And is there anything else major there, Dr. Snyder, that was in those MIRR amended rules?
No, those were the two big things.
Well, I appreciate appreciate everybody's attendance, and that's pretty much all I have.
Tori, there was a bill that that seems like it has become a bit stagnant, but it is a bill that actually does away with the panels of three providers and allows the employee to choose their own doctor.
Yes.
Is that still pretty much stagnant?
Correct. That bill did not get any traction. That was House Bill 1467 by Representative Towns out of Memphis, and it was left over from last year. It was actually filed last year and then rolled to the first calendar of 2024. The bill did make it to a House subcommittee calendar, but during that committee meeting, the sponsor of the bill sent that to the Workers' Comp Advisory Council to be reviewed, and it that's been a month or more, and there's been no activity in the Senate. There's been no activity, as far as I know, about the advisory council reviewing that bill. But yes, that bill doesn't seem to have any traction and doesn't seem to have sufficient support. And like Misty said, it did other things too, but mainly would let the injured worker go to whatever doctor they wanted to.
Any other questions? Mark Finks, can we go back to you? Misty has a proxy from Dr. Tudor.
Okay. All right. That makes.
No, it's the opposite. Misty has a proxy from Rob Benke.
Okay.
And I have a proxy from Dr. Tudor.
Okay. That makes the quorum then. We have a quorum.
Okay. Well, then we're going to need to go back and do an approval of the minutes from December 5th. I will need a motion to approve.
I'll move on record.
Second.
And a second. All right.
Second.
Dr. Kaiser. So moved. The minutes are approved. And then we did we need to do anything on the ODGs?
Yes.
All right. We need to approve the new ODGs that were attached to our information on the meeting today. It doesn't seem like a whole lot was changed. It looks like there was mainly some updates, a few changes to some of the diagnostics. Is there any discussion about those before we vote? Okay, and then I will need a motion to approve the ODG updates that occurred in December.
So moved.
All right. I have Dr. Proby and Dr. Kaiser. Who wants to be first?
Kaiser.
Dr. Kaiser?
I'll
All right. And Dr. Brophy will second. Okay. Those are so moved. I think that's all we needed to vote on, correct?
That's it.
All right.
Okay.
And then next is the UR report from Dr. Snyder.
So four requests for penalties were sent to the penalty unit since our last meeting. Two of them had to do with failed notice because of no updated information on the C-35A. So when a denial of treatment goes to the injured worker, they are required to receive that notice of denial in the mail, and any attorneys or representatives are to receive, and any physicians to receive either by fax or email, those notice of that denial. Both of these were failure of that we were notified by attorneys that they had been failed to notify the patient in a proper manner because they had the wrong address on the C-35A. And so those were sent to penalty. Two others had to use were where utilization denials were not legitimate. And so this was where they quoted either the wrong section of ODG or they did not have records. If they denied a treatment because they didn't have records, that's not a legitimate denial or legitimate reason for a denial in the state of Tennessee. And then lastly, there were two cases where a physician was required to submit a utilization review appeal. Once the adjuster was notified of the utilization review appeal, the adjuster approved the treatment. This occurred on two patients multiple times. And so penalties were sent to the adjusters on both of those claims. where it was not legitimate that the physician was required to use staff time and blood pressure time and aggravation time to submit a utilization repeal, only to have that overturned, to have that approved by the adjuster. One of these cases also involved where the appeal was filed with the Bureau, and the Bureau had to go through the overturn of the denial of the medications before the individual was before the approval for the medication came through. And so it wasted staff time, and we are looking very closely at that. If any other physicians see where utilization review is being overturned, where a denial is occurring, and then immediately the adjuster is approving the treatment on a regular basis, please bring that to our attention. And I want to thank Dr. Kaiser for bringing two of those cases to our attention so that, you know, that was an abuse of utilization review that we believe is something that the adjusters need to look at very closely before they're going to send a case to utilization review. They should have the history that these medications have been approved previously, or that there's good medical documentation as to why they shouldn't even go to utilization review. So,
thank you very much for the comment.
We'll keep trying.
Thank you for letting us know about that. That way we can take it back to our folks as well for those in attendance. Next on the agenda is AI.
AI is a hot topic every place you look. People are talking about AI and the use of medicine. We received an announcement from CorVel. CorVel provides our consultation services for our medical payment committee, but they are also the vendor for workers' compensation cases for the state of Tennessee employees. And so this announcement was that they were using generative AI in their work. And so I asked them how they were using the AI, and it turns out that all of the patient and client data is used inside the digital walls to CorVel. So it's all an internal document. It is not taking outside records or moving records to an outside vendor. So they're using that internally. As far as we know, none of the AI vendors are HIPAA compliant at this point. So you should just be aware of that. If you're dealing with medical records, you have to be very careful that if you're using AI applications to summarize those records, that it's all internal. And at this point in time, using any of the outside vendors, such as ChatGPT or Claude, you should be aware that none of them at the present time are HIPAA compliant.
All right, and last, there is a COVID update.
We do not have updated statistics, but what I can tell you, that little bug is still around. It is still quite active. I was out for 2 weeks. So just be aware that you still need to be cautious. Get your updated vaccine and try to be safe.
New business, NCCI economics briefing.
So I had a number of things that have come across my desk that I thought would be of interest to individuals that can look it up. NCCI released their quarter four 2023 economics briefing, and then you can get that on their website. Okay. That talked about the additional jobs added, what the normal labor market is, wage growth, and workers' compensation payroll growth over the course of the last year. The next one had to do with psychedelics. As if we didn't have enough trouble with marijuana, there are five states where psychedelic bills have been introduced to legalize the use of mushroom, psilocybin, MDMA, and ketamine to treat mental illnesses, to allow that to be legal. And so it's interesting that the states that have those are coast to coast, California and Hawaii, Massachusetts and New Jersey, and in between Arizona. So it doesn't necessarily follow whether they're a red or blue state. So just be aware of that. As far as we know, there's not been any push in Tennessee. So far there's been no significant activity in the medical marijuana arena this year in the state legislature. The next one, just be aware that gabapentinoids, that is gabapentin and Lyrica, cause severe exacerbation of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And so individuals that already that are at high risk for pulmonary complications, it's made worse by gabapentin and Lyrica.
And then there's FDA and spinal cord stimulators.
Right. So the FDA approved spinal cord stimulator systems for non-surgical back pain. Boston Scientific received their approval. There were a couple other ones. Solus. So, and Boston Scientific for the treatment of non-surgical back pain. This came under the similar device approval process. And so just be aware of that for those that are maybe seeing that under pain management.
I've seen one recently that we just sent off for review. Now that's quite interesting.
It's not approved by ODG, right?
No. Mm-hmm. Although they're going to be forced to update their spinal cord stimulator guidelines because of that. And then finally, outreach. With the help of Dr. Kaiser, I reached out to the Tennessee Psychiatric Association, and they published an article that I wrote asking for the assistance of psychiatrists for workers' compensation patients, trying to make the case that that with proper communication and an effective system that we can limit the friction involved in the treatment of workers' compensation patients. And I appreciate Dr. Kaiser's help in getting contacts for that, but also his help in identifying ways that we can try to reduce the frictions. In spite of the fact the poor guy still every day has to email Susie for some problem or another.
It's only about 10 times a day. As a follow-up to that also, we're having our annual meeting Saturday. I'm going to make a brief presentation about what we're doing.
I appreciate that. Thanks so much for your help.
Yep.
And thank you from the carriers, too. We need psychiatrists desperately. any announcements? Just the next meeting, Tuesday, June 11th, 2024. I'm assuming it's from 1 to 3 and at the Bureau. Mm-hmm.
And you're welcome to continue virtually, or we'll welcome you here as well. Unfortunately, we haven't been serving lunch, so I'm not sure we ever did, but we used to have lunches, but no longer. But we welcome anybody that wants to come.
Are there any other announcements or other business that anyone would like to discuss or bring up before we adjourn? Do we need a motion for adjournment? Yes, no, or maybe? Or do we just adjourn?
We just adjourn.
All right. With that, and no more conversation.
Thank you, everybody. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
If you have questions, call us.
Thanks, everybody.